Usually when we talk about looking for a new home, there's this expectation of visual simplicity.
Right, yeah. Like it should just make sense on a map.
Exactly. You pull up a map on your phone, you draw a mental circle around a city center, you look at the suburbs kind of spreading out in all directions, and you just find a neighborhood with a manageable commute. And you just start looking at open houses. It's an entirely two-dimensional process for most people.
It really is. You're just trading commute time for square footage.
Yeah, you're basically just sliding your finger across a flat screen, trading a few extra minutes of drive time for a larger backyard or, an extra bedroom.
It's geographically flat, both literally and conceptually, I mean. The rules of the game in a standard suburban market are pretty uniform.
Right.
The climate on one side of that circle is exactly the same as the climate on the other.
Yeah, you don't cross a county line and suddenly need a snowplow in the suburbs.
Exactly. And the local government operates the same way. The property taxes make intuitive sense, and the ground underneath the house is, well, predictable.
It's a straight line of logic.
Yeah.
But then you step into the world of mountain real estate, and suddenly that flat, two-dimensional map on your phone is not just useless, it is actively lying to you.
Oh, absolutely lying. It's a completely different paradigm.
We are looking at a real estate landscape that defies every standard convention of home buying. What looks like a straight 10-mile line on a map might actually represent a massive change in altitude.
Or a completely different weather system.
Right, a different weather system, a totally different local economy, and honestly, a legal minefield.
It's the absolute definition of topographical and regulatory muddy waters. I mean, you might find a beautiful property that seems perfectly positioned on paper.
Right, the perfect cabin.
Yeah, the perfect cabin. Only to realize that getting to your front door in January requires a vehicle with tire chains.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Or that the local municipality has quietly banned the exact thing you plan to do with the house just to, afford the mortgage.
Exactly. The map does not show you the sheer cliffs, and I mean both the physical ones and the financial ones.
No, definitely doesn't.
And that is exactly where we are going today on this deep dive. We're taking a massive stack of data, and we are cutting right through those glossy, surface-level mountain real estate brochures.
And we all know the ones you're talking about.
Oh, you know the exact ones. The perfectly framed A-frame cabin, the gentle smoke drifting from the river rock chimney, the string lights on the deck.
The promise of this simple, rustic, uncomplicated life in the woods.
Right, the romance of it all. But we are here to uncover the cold, hard, and frankly fascinating math of relocating to the North Carolina High Country.
Which is incredibly necessary if you're actually serious about making a move.
Yeah, our mission is to equip you, the listener, with the hyperlocal knowledge you actually need to make a smart decision. Whether you are looking for a primary residence to raise a family, a seasonal ski getaway to kind of escape the heat, or a pure investment property.
Because if you rely on the romance of the brochure or just, a quick internet search of the most famous mountain towns, you are going to get blindsided.
Blindsided.
Totally. You have to move past the aesthetics and look at the structural realities of the region.
To do this, we're pulling from a remarkably detailed source today. We are using the Best Towns Near Boone, NC 2026 Buyer Comparison Guide.
And I just want to point out, this is an incredible resource.
It really is. This is not just some algorithmic listicle scraped together by a travel blog. This is grounded in 30 years of hyperlocal market data.
30 years is a long time in that market.
Yeah, and it's on-the-ground analysis by Teresa Overcash, who is the broker and owner of Realty One Group Results.
Right. She's seen every cycle of this market.
Exactly. She has overseen an incredible volume of closings in this specific region. So we are dealing with serious, lived expertise here. We're looking at the market through the eyes of someone who actually has to solve these geographical puzzles for buyers
Yeah.
every single day.
And that lived expertise is crucial. I mean, in this specific market, you simply cannot pick your location based on the name painted on the town limit sign.
You really can't.
No, you have to match your specific lifestyle goals and honestly, your risk tolerance to the hard data of the ground you are actually buying.
Most people searching for mountain homes in this area get a mental list of maybe three or four popular towns.
Usually Boone, Blowing Rock, maybe Banner Elk.
Right, Boone, Blowing Rock, Banner Elk, the heavy hitters. But the data shows why you actually need to widen the lens and look at six distinct markets.
Which completely changes the game for buyers when they realize what's out there.
It really does. As we unpack this today, we are going to dive deep into four incredibly counterintuitive realities about pricing, taxes, zoning, and weather.
And these realities, completely flip standard home buying logic entirely on its head.
They really do. The level of illusion in this market is what makes it so fascinating to analyze.
Right, because when you are buying in a standard market, say, the suburbs of Charlotte or Raleigh, a 30-minute drive doesn't change your fundamental reality.
No, you just have a slightly longer podcast to listen to on the way to work.
Exactly. But in the high country, a 30-minute drive can mean a completely different microclimate, a totally different economic engine, and, well, a completely different legal framework for property rights.
So let's just jump right into the deepest end of the pool here, the sticker price.
Let's do it. That's where everyone starts anyway.
Because let's be honest, whether we admit it or not, that is where every single buyer starts their search. You pull up a real estate app and you type in your maximum budget.
Right, and you just see what pops up.
But Teresa's data reveals this massive illusion regarding what your money actually buys depending on how far you're willing to drive from the region's center of gravity.
And in this region, the absolute undeniable center of gravity is Boone.
Boone is it?
Yeah, Boone is the economic and cultural anchor of the high country. Everything else orbits it to some degree.
Right. So let's look at Boone just to establish our baseline for this conversation. The median home price in Boone right now is sitting at $525,000.
That's a significant entry point.
It is. It's the big player.
Yeah.
And what is fascinating about Boone, and I guess what justifies that price tag for a lot of people, is that it has a real four-season, year-round economy.
Yes. This is not a ghost town that boards up its windows in January when the tourists leave.
Exactly.
And that economic baseline is almost entirely driven by Appalachian State University. I mean, you're looking at roughly 21,000 jobs and student enrollment combined.
21,000. That's a huge footprint for a mountain town.
It's massive. That creates a massive stable floor of economic activity that simply does not exist in the smaller, purely tourism-driven towns nearby.
Right, because students need housing. Professors need housing.
Exactly. Because of the university, you have grocery stores that stay open year-round, a downtown retail sector that actually survives the seasonal dips, and just a constant unyielding demand for housing.
And if you live inside the Boone town limits, your life logistically looks pretty similar to living in any other well-equipped American town.
Yeah, it's very normal.
Your commutes are incredibly normal. 5 to 15 minutes to get to the grocery store, to the hospital, to work. You have reliable utilities.
It feels like a standard, highly functional town that just happens to be nestled in this beautiful mountain valley.
It's the premium product.
Exactly. You are paying a premium for the convenience of suburban infrastructure wrapped in mountain aesthetics.
But this brings us to the first major distortion in our map. And this is where my brain started to struggle a bit with the math when I was looking at the source material.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shock the first time you see it.
Wilkes County, which is just down the mountain, has a median home price of $265,000.
$265,000.
That means Wilkes County buys exactly what $525,000 buys you in Boone. It is half the price.
Literally half.
It's the absolute value anchor of this entire market.
Half the price. I want to let that sink in for a moment for anyone listening. You are looking at a 50% discount for roughly the same square footage, and honestly, often with way more acreage.
Wow. More land for half the price.
Yeah. Wilkes County is what we call the Piedmont to Mountain Transition Zone. You are getting the foothills, you're getting the immediate proximity to the Blue Ridge Mountains, but you are completely detached from the premium pricing of the college and tourism engine up in Watauga County.
Okay. I have to push back on this a little bit, because if I'm a buyer with a $500,000 budget and I want a mountain house, my brain naturally defaults to a cabin in Boone or Blowing Rock.
Sure, because it's the brand you know.
Right. It's the name brand. Mm-hmm. If you're telling me I can cut my mortgage in half by driving 45 minutes down the road to Wilkes County, my immediate skeptical thought is, what is wrong with Wilkes County?
That's the most common question.
Right. Like, am I trading authentic mountain charm for a depressed local economy, like a rust belt situation? There has to be a massive catch if the market is discounting it by 50%.
That is the most natural assumption a buyer can make, but it is fundamentally incorrect in this specific instance.
Okay, why?
The catch isn't a loss of charm or economic depression. It's a shift in the type of economy you are anchoring yourself to.
Interesting.
Yeah, Wicks County is not a struggling rural outpost hanging on by a thread. It actually has a genuine, robust, full-time economy that is completely independent of the seasonal tourism cycle.
So what is driving their economy if it isn't ski resorts and college students?
Corporate infrastructure and agriculture.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wilkes County is a massive industrial and corporate hub. You have the Lowe's company's headquarters footprint there.
Wait, like Lowe's Hardware.
Exactly. You have the Wilkes Regional Medical Center, which is a major employer. You have major agricultural and manufacturing players like Tyson Foods.
So it's real jobs, not just seasonal stuff.
Right. This is a working blue-collar and corporate local economy. So when you buy a home in Wilkes County, you aren't sacrificing basic infrastructure. You aren't moving to the middle of nowhere.
You're just shifting the focus.
You're just choosing an economy built on corporate logistics, healthcare, and manufacturing, rather than an economy built on selling lift tickets and university degrees.
That makes a lot of sense. You are paying for the brand of Boone, whereas Wilkes is just functioning as a normal place for people to live and work.
Exactly.
But here is where the data gets incredibly specific, particularly for how people actually pay for these homes. The guide points out that because Wilkes County is technically classified differently by the federal government, buyers can access USDA zero-down financing in most of its rural tracts.
This is a huge deal.
Now, I've heard of VA loans having zero down, but USDA, that loan program is completely unavailable in the other five towns we're looking at today. 0% down. How does that actually work?
Well, the USDA Rural Development Loan Program is one of the most powerful and honestly often overlooked financing tools in real estate.
I didn't even know it existed.
A lot of people don't. The federal government wants to incentivize population growth and economic stability in areas outside of major urban and suburban density zones.
Okay.
Because Wilkes County falls into this specific demographic and geographic classification, the government essentially backs the mortgage.
Wow.
For a qualified buyer, this means you can purchase a home without putting a single dollar down toward the principal at closing.
So if I'm a first-time home buyer, or maybe, you know, a retiree who just sold a house in Florida and wants to keep all that equity sitting in an index fund generating interest rather than sinking it into a down payment, this is a staggering advantage.
It completely changes the entire calculus of relocation. I mean, you can buy a $265,000 home with no down payment, preserving your liquid cash, and you are living just 45 minutes from the peak of the Blue Ridge Mountains.
That is incredible.
It's exactly why retirees who want that mountain proximity but refuse to pay the hyperinflated luxury pricing of Watauga County are routinely landing in Wilkesboro. They get the view, they get the seasons, but they keep their cash.
Okay, so Wilkes is the pure pragmatic value play.
Yeah.
But let's say I'm a buyer who still wants a bit more of that classic, quaint mountain town feel.
I want the aesthetics.
Right. I want to be a little higher up in elevation. I want the cute downtown. But I still cannot stomach the $500,000 entry point of Boone. The data points to a second massive hidden gem, and this one really surprised me. West Jefferson over in Ashe County.
West Jefferson is fascinating from an urban planning and economic standpoint.
Right.
Yeah. If Wilkes County is the industrial and corporate value play, West Jefferson is the cultural value play.
Okay, let's look at the numbers. The 2026 median price there is $385,000.
So still very affordable compared to Boone.
All right, we're talking roughly 25 to 30% below Boone. And the drive, it's only a 28-minute drive to Boone. Yet, it seems completely overlooked by out-of-state buyers who just search for towns near Boone.
It's the classic blind spot in real estate search algorithms. Buyers type a famous town into their app, they set a 10-mile radius, and they completely miss what is happening just one county over.
Because it's literally not in the circle they drew.
Exactly. But Ashe County has built an incredible identity entirely on its own terms. West Jefferson isn't trying to be Boone.
What's the vibe there?
Well, it has a state-designated arts district right in its downtown. It's highly walkable. It has historic character. It has immediate access to the New River for recreation.
And they grow Christmas trees.
Yes.
The guide mentions this, and I had to look it up because it seems so random, but it's a massive, massive industry there.
It's not just random agriculture. It is the economic backbone of the county. Ashe County is one of the largest producers of Christmas trees in the entire United States. And this has a profound hidden effect on the real estate market. The Christmas tree farming industry acts as an economic stabilizer, much like the university does in Boone, but without the corresponding spike in housing costs.
Wait, how does farming trees stabilize the housing market? I'm missing the connection there.
Because it preserves the land and provides generational, steady income. When you have thousands of acres dedicated to a highly profitable, sustainable agricultural export like Christmas trees, that land isn't being sold off to developers.
Oh, to build massive subdivisions.
Right, or luxury condo complexes. It keeps the aesthetic of the county very pastoral and open. It keeps the local economy humming with agricultural jobs and export revenue.
It essentially blocks the sprawl.
Exactly. Yeah. It prevents the kind of rampant overdevelopment that ruins the very charm people move to the mountains to find. You have an agricultural backbone supporting a thriving arts and tourism front end.
That is a brilliant way to look at it.
Yeah.
The trees are basically acting as a buffer against suburban sprawl. So what does this all mean for the modern buyer? We have this quote in the source material from Lawrence Yun, the chief economist at the National Association of Realtors.
Right. Great quote.
He noted that price divergence within a single micro market widens as remote work buyers chase lifestyle over commute distance.
That quote is the skeleton key to understanding the entire current real estate market. And not just in the high country, but nationally.
How so?
Well, historically, home prices radiated outward almost perfectly from the employment center. It was a simple equation. The further you drove to the office, the cheaper the house. The commute was the tether.
Right.
But the explosion of remote work permanently severed that tether for millions of white-collar workers.
Because they don't have an office to drive to anymore.
Exactly. Now, these buyers are not asking, how long is my drive to the office in Boone or Charlotte? They are asking, how much lifestyle can I buy with this specific amount of money?
And when you change the question, the map changes.
Entirely. Driving 28 minutes to West Jefferson or 45 minutes to Wilkes County suddenly feels like a brilliant arbitrage strategy.
Yeah, because you're buying the same view, the same crisp mountain air, the same access to hiking trails for hundreds of thousands of dollars less, simply because you don't need to physically commute to the anchor city every single morning at 8 a.m.
It is arbitrage. You're essentially stepping off the rapidly accelerating escalator of Boone's hyperinflated housing market, walking next door to a parallel market and buying almost the exact same lifestyle for a fraction of the cost.
But, and this is a massive flashing neon, but we cannot just stop the calculation at the purchase price.
We certainly cannot. If you stop at the purchase price, you are walking into a trap.
Because if you move to Wilkes County to cut your purchase price in half, you might logically assume that your monthly carrying costs, your property tax, your insurance will drop by exactly half too.
That's the assumption, yeah.
The cheaper house means a cheaper tax bill, right?
Yeah.
But the data reveals something that completely broke my brain for a minute.
This is where the simple two-dimensional math completely breaks down.
Right.
And where buyers who rely on national real estate apps get very unpleasant surprises at the closing table.
We are hitting a paradox here. The data shows that property tax rates run entirely backwards from home prices in the high country.
It's true.
Let me lay out the numbers, and then I am going to need you to explain this to me like I'm 5 years old, because I had to read this section of Teresa's guide 3 times to make sure it wasn't a typo.
It is deeply counterintuitive if you are used to linear suburban markets where expensive towns have high taxes and cheap towns have low taxes.
Right. So Wekaga County, which encompasses Boone and Blowing Rock, this is the most expensive market we are talking about. This is where luxury mountain estates are pushing $2, $3, even $4 million easily.
Easily.
Yet, Wekaga County has the lowest property tax rate in the entire region. It is 0.353 per $100 of assessed valuation. Okay, then you go down the mountain to Wilkes County, the cheapest market. The blue-collar corporate agricultural hub, where homes are literally half the price. And Wilkes County has the highest tax rate.
Yes.
It is 0.630 per $100 of valuation. It is nearly double the rate of Wekaga. For context, Avery County, which has Banner Elk and Beach Mountain, sits in the middle at 0.520. Ashe County, with West Jefferson, is at 0.575. So what is going on here?
I know, it sounds crazy.
Why does the math reverse like this? It feels like the local governments in the cheaper counties are punishing their residents.
It feels punitive, sure, but if we connect this to the broader mechanics of municipal finance, it actually makes perfect, albeit frustrating, economic sense.
Okay, walk me through it.
You have to look at how a county funds its existence. A county has a mandatory baseline cost to operate. They have to pave the roads, run the public school system, pay the sheriff's deputies, maintain the water infrastructure, run the courts.
Right, the basics.
That baseline cost of civilization doesn't change drastically between these adjacent counties. A mile of asphalt costs roughly the same in Watauga as it does in Wilkes, but how they fund that baseline cost changes entirely based on the total value of all the real estate inside their borders.
Okay, so it is about the total pool of money they can draw from, the tax base.
Exactly. Think of the county's total property value as a pie. Watauga County is packed with multi-million dollar luxury second homes, expansive commercial real estate catering to tourists, and highly assessed university adjacent properties.
Their pie is huge.
Their pie of property value is massive. Because the pie is so overwhelmingly large, the county government only needs to take a very tiny sliver from each property owner, that a 0.353 rate, to generate enough millions of dollars to run the county for the year.
So because the houses are so hyper-expensive, the county can afford to keep the actual percentage rate incredibly low and still make their budget.
Yes. Now look at Wilkes County. The homes are much cheaper. There are far fewer ultra-luxury $5 million estates. The total pie of property value is much, much smaller.
Oh, I see where this is going.
So to generate the exact same absolute dollar amount needed to run their schools and pave their roads, Wilkes County has to take a much larger slice of the pie from everyone. They have to charge a higher rate, 0.630, just to meet their basic operating budget.
Okay, let me grab a pen and run a real-world scenario here so people can hear how this actually hits their wallet on a monthly basis.
Go for it.
Let's say I have a flat $500,000 budget. If I buy a $500,000 home in Watauga County with their low rate, my annual tax bill is roughly $1,765.
Right.
But if I take that exact same $500,000 and buy a massive, gorgeous, sprawling estate down in Wilkes County, my tax bill jumps to $3,150.
No.
Wait. I'm paying nearly $1,400 more a year in taxes for a house of the exact same price.
That is the exact mathematical reality, which is why buyers absolutely must run both numbers purchase price and local tax rate together to get an accurate monthly payment.
That is wild.
You cannot just look at the Zillow or Redfin estimate, which often uses a statewide or national average for taxes, and assume carrying costs are uniform across the region.
It's a trap for the unwary. You think you are being financially savvy by moving to the cheaper county, but if you buy at the top of that cheaper market, you're getting hit with a stealth premium on your monthly carrying costs.
Now, to be fair to Wilkes County, because a typical buyer might only spend $265,000 there, which is the median. Their total absolute tax bill might still end up lower than if they bought a $500,000 house in Boone.
Right, because the house is cheaper overall.
Right, but the rate itself acts as a hidden penalty if you are trying to buy a luxury property in a value zone.
And this level of granular, hyper-local complexity is exactly why we need to issue a massive practical warning here. If you're listening to this and running numbers in your head right now, stop.
Yes, please stop. This is a necessary reality check for anyone attempting to navigate this market from a distance.
The reality is that zoning, taxes, and lending rules in the high country are entirely parcel specific, and they change constantly. You cannot, under any circumstances, rely on generic online mortgage calculators or national real estate portals to give you the real math on a specific house.
They will steer you wrong every time in this region.
Because this complexity is so highly localized, buyers absolutely must verify current details with a local expert. The source material is explicitly clear on this. You have to work with someone like Teresa Overcash's team at Realty One Group Results. You have to have them pull the specific parcel data for the exact house you are looking at.
It's a non-notion.
Do not guess on this stuff, because guessing will cost you thousands of dollars a year. In fact, if you want to write this down, you can call or text her team at 336-262-311.
Or just email them.
Yeah, email is teresader@gmail.com. That's teresatedder@gmail.com.
That warning is vital because the property lines in these mountains dictate your entire financial reality. It is not uncommon to find a house that sits directly on the county line.
Really? Just straddling the line?
Literally. Half your driveway might be in Watauga County, and your kitchen and living room are in Avery County.
Oh my gosh. That sounds like a logistical nightmare.
It is. The tax implications, the school district zoning, the emergency services routing, it all hinges on exactly where that specific parcel is registered with the state.
Which perfectly transitions us into the next massive trapdoor in this market. Because if there is one area where parcel-specific rules will absolutely destroy an uninformed buyer, it's the world of short-term rentals.
Oh, boy.
The STR Mirage.
This is undoubtedly the most volatile, emotionally charged, and financially risky aspect of mountain real estate right now.
Let's set the scene for the listener. You figured out your mortgage. You factored in the reverse tax rates we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize the monthly carrying cost is a little higher than you wanted.
It happens all the time.
The next logical step for a huge percentage of buyers today is thinking, okay, no problem. I will just put it on Airbnb or VRBO for 2 weekends a month during ski season to offset the cost.
Right. That's the modern American dream, right? The side hustle vacation home.
The asset that pays for itself. But here is where Teresa's data delivers a massive icy reality check. You cannot just Airbnb anywhere you want.
The Wild West era of short-term rentals is over. Municipalities are fighting back against the commercialization of their neighborhoods, and they are using zoning laws as their primary weapon.
Let's look at Boone. The data states that Boone actually banned new short-term rentals in R1 residential zones in 2023. Let me repeat that word, banned.
And the nuance here is what catches out-of-state buyers every single day.
Right, because let me play the role of the naive investor.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in Raleigh, I pull up Airbnb, and I see a dozen houses in Boone available for rent this weekend. I look at the zoning map, and they are right in the middle of an R1 residential zone. My immediate thought is, well, they are renting it legally, so the city must allow it. I can buy the house next door, or better yet, I will just buy that exact house and keep the Airbnb going. Explain how this crap works, because it's brutal.
When the town of Boone passed the ban in 2023, they faced a legal and economic dilemma. They couldn't necessarily force existing legally operating Airbnb owners to shut down their businesses overnight without facing massive lawsuits.
Right. That makes sense.
So they grandfathered them in. They said, if you are already running an STR, you can keep running it. However, and this is the lethal trap for buyers, that grandfathered status is tied strictly to the current owner, not to the property itself.
Oh, wow.
It cannot transfer in a sale.
So it just goes poof.
Exactly. The very second that property is sold, the deed changes hands and a new name goes on the title, the grandfathered status vanishes into thin air. The new owner is immediately subject to the 2023 ban.
So imagine the nightmare scenario. You buy a $600,000 house in Boone. The previous owner shows you their financials. They were making $60,000 a year on Airbnb.
And you think you're getting a cash cow.
You close on a Friday expecting that income to pay your mortgage. On Monday, you list it on Airbnb. And on Tuesday, you get a cease and desist letter from the town of Boone because your new operation is entirely illegal.
And your rental income drops to zero instantly.
It is terrifying.
Man.
And it happens to out-of-state investors who just run math on a spreadsheet and assume that past performance guarantees future results without understanding the hyper-local legal mechanism.
And it's not just Boone. Every single town in this region has a completely different set of rules. It is a patchwork quilt of regulation.
Yeah, the guide breaks this down. Blowing Rock restricts STRs in residential areas, though they do allow them in their specific village core.
Mm-hmm.
Banner Elk makes you have a minimum 2-night stay in the summer to prevent constant turnover. Wes Jefferson uses this very clever distance separation rule. You literally cannot have an Airbnb within a certain geographic radius of another existing Airbnb.
Which is a brilliant piece of urban planning, honestly.
It really is.
It prevents entire neighborhood blocks from turning into shadow hotels, preserving housing for actual residents, while still allowing some tourism revenue.
Even Wilkesboro, the blue-collar value town, adopted stricter zoning for short-term rentals in June 2026. The walls are closing in everywhere.
Everywhere except one very specific place.
Okay, where?
From an economic perspective, there is one town that operates as the ultimate exception to the rule. It is the STR gold mine.
Beach Mountain.
It is essentially an entire municipality that has been engineered from the ground up for short-term rental yields. It has the highest yield in the entire region.
Wow.
The demand is relentless, driven by skiers in the winter and people desperate to escape the brutal southern humidity in the summer.
But even in the gold mine, there is a catch. The guide is very clear about this. The amenities, the massive pool, the tennis courts, the golf course, the things that make people actually want to rent your house instead of the one down the street, they aren't public town amenities.
Nope. They are privately controlled by the Beach Mountain Club, And membership to the club is not automatically included with every single property deed.
Oh, that's tricky.
Exactly. You could buy a house on Beach Mountain, assuming you're going to command premium nightly rental rates, and then realize your guests have absolutely no access to the resort amenities because the previous owner let the club membership lapse.
Or the specific parcel was just never admitted to the club in the first place.
Exactly.
So again, parcel-specific due diligence is everything. But with all these rules, with the bans, the club memberships, the shifting zoning laws, how are people actually buying these properties?
Yeah.
Because the investment money is still flooding into the mountains.
Yeah.
This brings us to a financing acronym that I keep seeing everywhere in the data. DSCR.
DSCR, debt service coverage ratio. It is the financial engine that has completely and perhaps permanently reshaped the high country real estate market over the last 3 to 5 years.
We have some incredible insight here from the source material. Angie Wilmoth, who is a senior loan officer at Glory Mortgage over in Wilkesboro, notes that DSCR loans allow investors to buy second, third, or fourth properties using rental math alone.
Using rental math alone, that's the key.
Let me break down why this is so mind-bending to me.
Mm.
When you or I go to a traditional bank to get a mortgage for a house, the underwriter demands everything. They look at our W-2s, our personal income, our tax returns, our personal debt-to-income ratio.
They want to know your whole life story.
Exactly. But with a DSCR loan, the bank does not care about your personal income.
Not at all. Your personal salary is almost entirely irrelevant to the underwriting process.
That sounds crazy.
The bank is no longer evaluating you as a homeowner. They're evaluating the physical property as a standalone business entity.
How does that even work? How do they know the mortgage will get paid?
They look at the projected rental income. The bank or the lender will pull data straight from software platforms like AirDNA, which scrape Airbnb and VRBO to estimate how much a specific house in a specific zip code will generate per month.
Okay, so it's algorithm driven.
Yes. The underwriter takes that projected monthly income and divides it by the monthly mortgage payment, the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, or PITI. If the property is projected to generate enough gross income to cover its own monthly debt obligation, the bank funds the loan.
So if the monthly mortgage payment is going to be $3,000 and the AirDNA algorithm says the house will rent for $4,000 a month, the bank just says, great, the asset covers its own debt. Here is the money.
Precisely. And as Freddie Mac's chief economist Sam Cater points out in the guide, when standard interest rates get volatile or when traditional lending standards tighten up, buyers naturally flock toward these flexible, asset-based lending products.
It allows people to scale a real estate portfolio incredibly fast.
It does.
But this completely changes the psychology of the market. We usually think of buying a mountain cabin as this deeply personal, almost romantic, emotional purchase.
Right. You want to build memories.
You imagine your kids sitting by the stone fireplace. You imagine retiring there. You imagine the memories. But with DSCR loans and AirDNA data, this is functioning exactly like commercial real estate.
Are out-of-state investors basically just treating Beach Mountain like a giant spreadsheet?
Yes. They are entirely detached from the romanticism of the mountains. They are buying yield. They are buying a capitalization rate.
Wow.
And this financial mechanism creates a very stark division in the high country. You now have two distinct zones existing side by side.
What are the zones?
You have towns for living like Boone and West Jefferson, where the zoning laws actively protect full-time residents and foster community. And then you have towns for yielding like Beach Mountain and parts of Banner Elk, where the entire ecosystem is optimized for high turnover tourism, DSCR loans, and maximum investor returns. It is literally two completely different worlds existing within 30 minutes of each other.
Exactly.
But if you decide you want to play the investor game, and you target a place like Beach Mountain for those massive rental yields, you suddenly collide head-on with the physical reality of the mountains. And that brings us to the elevation equation, microclimates and insurance.
Because yield on a spreadsheet looks fantastic until the pipes freeze solid in January and the driveway washes out in a spring thaw.
Right, because you aren't just buying a floor plan with some nice countertops, you're buying a microclimate.
A very aggressive microclimate.
We just identified Beach Mountain as the ultimate STR investment zone. But what does it actually take to maintain a physical structure there? Here's a fact that stopped me in my tracks when I read the guide. Beach Mountain gets 40 to 90 inches of snow per year. Boone gets only 4 to 8 inches.
It is a staggering meteorological difference. We are talking about two locations that are only 32 minutes apart by car.
32 minutes. I drive 32 minutes just to get across town in traffic sometimes. And yet one town gets a mild dusting of 8 inches of snow all winter, and the other gets buried under 90 inches.
It's intense.
How is that scientifically even possible in the South?
Elevation is the great multiplier in the high country. It dictates absolutely everything. Boone sits in a valley at roughly 3,333 feet above sea level. Beech Mountain sits at 5,506 feet.
Oh, wow.
It's actually the highest incorporated town east of the Mississippi River. When weather systems roll in from the west and hit that sudden dramatic change in elevation, you get a phenomenon called orographic lift.
Orographic lift.
Yeah. The air is forced up the mountain, it cools rapidly, and it wrings out all its moisture like a sponge. What falls as a cold, heavy rain in Boone is a blinding blizzard on Beech Mountain.
That is incredible. It sounds like driving 30 minutes up the mountain road is the equivalent of moving from Atlanta to Anchorage.
That is a very apt metaphor. You are moving into a subalpine environment, and the environment is actively trying to dismantle your house at 5,000 feet.
Dismantle it?
Literally. The freeze-thaw cycles, where it drops below freezing at night, thaws during the day, and freezes again, are absolutely brutal on concrete foundations, on gravel driveways, and on roofing material.
And this physical reality directly hits your wallet through insurance.
Oh, yes, it does.
Let's look at the estimated annual insurance cost from Teresa's guide, because this is where the spreadsheet logic of DSCR loans gets complicated. Down in Wilkes County, at 1,000 feet of elevation where they only see 2 to 5 inches of snow a year, your annual homeowner's insurance is roughly $1,200 to $1,700.
Very standard.
But up on Beech Mountain, you're looking at $2,100 to $2,800 a year. And that is if you can even get a standard policy. The guide explicitly mentions that wildfire-adjacent underwriting is now standard for most North Carolina carriers up there. What does that mean?
Well, the insurance industry nationally has become hyper-aware of environmental risks, particularly after the wildfires out west.
Hey.
When you build a house perched on a heavily forested ridgeline, accessed only by winding, steep, narrow roads, the risk profile skyrockets. If a fire breaks out, standard municipal fire trucks cannot reach you easily. There are no fire hydrants every 100 feet, like in the suburbs.
So the carriers charge a massive premium for that risk.
Exactly. Furthermore, because of those brutal subalpine winters, you cannot just buy a standard homeowner's policy. You have to add very specific riders to your policy to be protected.
What kind of riders?
Ice dam riders and freeze-thaw water riders.
Ice dam?
Yeah. Imagine you are renting your Beech Mountain house out on Airbnb. The guests check out on a Sunday in January, and they turn the heat all the way down to save you money, not realizing what they are doing.
Oh, no.
A pipe in the exterior wall freezes and bursts. Because it is a short-term rental, the house sits empty until the cleaning crew arrives on Thursday. Water flows unabated for 3 days.
That's a disaster.
The damage is catastrophic. It can run into the tens of thousands of dollars. Standard insurance policies often cap or entirely exclude that kind of specific water damage above 3,500 feet unless you pay extra for the specific rider.
That is terrifying. And then there's the reality of just getting your guests to the front door.
Logistics.
The guide is very firm on road access. If you buy in Beech Mountain or Upper Banner Elk, you absolutely must have a four-wheel drive vehicle, and you will occasionally need to put physical tire chains on your car.
It's not a suggestion. It's a requirement.
You cannot just roll up in a front-wheel drive rental sedan from the Charlotte airport in February and expect to make it up the mountain.
Which is another massive hidden logistical consideration for STR investors. If your guests get stuck at the bottom of the mountain because they rented a standard sedan, they are not going to blame the weather. They are going to blame you.
Of course they will.
They are going to demand a refund, and they are going to leave a terrible review that tanks your AirDNA rating. When you buy a short-term rental at 5,000 feet, you are actively managing the logistics of snow removal, road access, and guest safety from hundreds of miles away.
Compare that nightmare to the value zones we discussed earlier. West Jefferson gets maybe 10 to 18 inches of snow a year, and because it sits under 3,000 feet, the main roads are plowed incredibly fast by the state.
Much more manageable.
And Wilkes County gets practically nothing, 2 to 5 inches, and rarely ever has to close its roads. So again, it forces the buyer to ask a very hard question. Are you buying a place to relax, or are you buying a part-time job battling the elements?
It all comes back to defining your fundamental purpose before you ever define your location. If you want a ski-in, ski-out yield generator, you embrace the chaos and the snow of Beech Mountain.
Right.
But if you want a peaceful retirement where you don't have to shovel snow just to get your car out for a doctor's appointment, you have to look at Wilkes or West Jefferson.
Which brings us to the people who are actually living in these microclimates full-time. Let's pivot away from the investors and talk about the primary residents. If you are bringing a family to the high country, the aesthetics of the cabin and the yield of the Airbnb become totally irrelevant.
Completely irrelevant.
The school district and the physical land you are buying become your absolute top priorities.
Exactly. When you shift from an investor mindset to a primary resident mindset, the entire calculus of the region changes. The metrics of success aren't occupancy rates and AirDNA projections. They are classroom sizes, infrastructure reliability, and community integration.
So let's lay out the facts regarding the school districts as outlined in the source material, because this dictates a huge amount of the relocation traffic for families.
This is a huge driver for the market.
First, you have Watauga County Schools, which covers Boone and Blowing Rock. This is a highly sought-after district. The data shows they are known for being high-performing, with small class sizes and very strong parent involvement.
Yep, very true.
In fact, Blowing Rock School, which is a K-8 school, is specifically highlighted as being incredibly popular for families moving into the area.
That specific school acts as a massive demographic draw. You have families who want that boutique, walkable village lifestyle of Blowing Rock, but they demand top-tier educational infrastructure for their children.
So the school props up the real estate values.
The reputation of that K-8 school sustains property values in that specific zone immensely.
Then you have Avery County Schools, which covers Banner Elk and Beach Mountain. This is described factually as a small rural district with very tight community ties.
Right.
And then over in the value zones, you have Ashe County Schools for West Jefferson and Wilkes County Schools. Both of these districts are specifically highlighted in the guide for having very strong career tech programs.
And that directly reflects the local economies we discussed earlier. Wilkes and Ashe have those working agricultural and manufacturing bases.
The Tyson and Lowe's jobs.
Right. So their educational systems are smartly tailored to provide strong technical and career pathways for students who intend to stay and work in the regional economy, rather than just preparing everyone for a four-year university out of state.
But navigating school district lines is only half the battle of moving a family here. The other half is making sure the physical piece of land you are buying isn't hiding a financial time bomb.
This is the scary part.
And this brings us to the North Carolina due diligence process, which seems uniquely terrifying in the mountains.
It is perhaps the most critical legal mechanism for a buyer to understand in this state, and it functions very differently at altitude.
According to the guide, North Carolina uses a single due diligence period. During this specific window, a buyer pays a non-refundable fee directly to the seller, and in exchange, the buyer can walk away from the contract for literally any reason or no reason at all. Now, down to the Piedmont. In the flatter areas like the Triad or Charlotte, this period usually lasts 10 to 14 days. But Teresa's data is very clear. In the high country, your due diligence period absolutely needs to be 14 to 21 days. Why the extra week? What takes so long?
Because inspecting a mountain property is infinitely more complex than inspecting a standard suburban tract home.
Because it's on a mountain.
Right. In a suburb, you hire one general home inspector. They come out for 3 hours, they check the roof, the HVAC, the electrical panel, and you are done. The house is hooked up to a municipal city water line and a municipal city sewer line. But in the mountains, you are very likely dealing with independent, localized, off-grid systems.
You are basically running your own utility company for your house.
In many ways, yes. You need the standard home inspector, of course, but then you also need a specialized well inspector to check the water quality, the pump mechanics, and the flow rate. Because if a well runs dry in the summer, you have a major problem.
I didn't even think about a well running dry.
You need a propane company to come out and inspect the buried tanks and the high pressure lines. And crucially, most importantly, you need a highly specialized septic inspection.
Well, let's talk about the septic system, because the numbers here are staggering. I have lived in cities my whole life, so a septic system is a bit of a mystery to me. The guide states that a comprehensive septic inspection costs between $300 and $450.
That's just to look at it.
But if that inspector finds that the system has failed, a replacement runs anywhere from $5,000 to $25,000.
$25,000. Think about that. Suddenly, that great deal you found on a charming cabin in the woods is financially ruinous.
How could it possibly cost 25 grand to put a tank in the ground?
Mountain terrain is notoriously difficult for septic systems. To install one, the soil has to pass a perk test, meaning it has to percolate or drain water at a certain rate. But mountain soil is often just solid rock underneath a thin layer of dirt.
Oh, because you're on a mountain.
Exactly. The slope might be too steep for a standard gravity-fed leach field. If that happens, the county requires you to install a highly engineered, incredibly expensive pump system to push the waste uphill to a suitable drainage area.
And you cannot find all of that out in a week.
No way. It takes time to get these specialized inspectors up the mountain, get the lab reports back on the water quality, get quotes from excavation contractors for a new septic field, and negotiate with the seller.
You need that full 21-day window to protect your deposit.
Which brings us to our second major reality check for anyone listening.
We cannot stress this enough. This is the difference between a successful relocation and a generational financial mistake.
Whether you are trying to navigate exactly where a school district line falls on a mountain ridge, or you are trying to assess the viability of a 30-year-old septic tank buried in solid rock, or you are trying to check the latest minute-by-minute zoning laws for short-term rentals, the landscape here is incredibly localized.
It's so localized. You cannot do this alone with a search engine. Buyers must verify all current details with a local expert who actually works in these specific counties. The guide makes it clear. You need to work with Teresa Overcash's team at Realty One Group Results.
Yes.
They are the ones who can pull the specific parcel data and tell you if that cabin actually comes with club access or working well. You need a guide who knows exactly where the landmines are buried. Again, that's 3-3-6-2-6-2-3-1-1-1 or teresaitedarter@gmail.com.
Having a professional who understands that a property needs a $25,000 septic system before your due diligence money goes hard and becomes non-refundable is just invaluable.
So we have covered an immense amount of ground today on this deep dive. We've gone from the median prices of Boone to the reverse tax math of Watauga and Wilkes to the brutal realities of Airbnb bans, 90-inch snowfalls, and the terrifying economics of mountain plumbing.
It's a lot to process.
How does a buyer actually synthesize all of this data into a final decision?
You synthesize it by abandoning the glossy brochure entirely. You have to stop looking at the aesthetics and adopt a framework built entirely on physical realities.
And the source material closes firmly on exactly that. Teresa Overcash's golden framework for high country real estate. She argues that finding the right town is not about the brand name or the zip code or the aesthetic of the chimney.
It's really not.
The right town is a function of three very specific physical realities.
Number one.
Elevation.
Elevation. Because elevation determines your weather, your snow accumulation, and your insurance premiums.
It dictates whether you need a private snowplow contractor and tire chains, or if you can drive a standard sedan year-round. It dictates whether your pipes will freeze if the power goes out in January.
Okay, number two.
Driveway grade.
This one is so practical it hurts.
It really is.
You can have the most beautiful million-dollar architectural masterpiece of a house, but if the driveway is a 30-degree incline made of loose gravel, can you actually get to your front door in January when it is covered in a sheet of ice? The view from the deck does not matter if the house is physically inaccessible for 3 months of the year.
And number three, minutes to a hospital.
This is the ultimate reality check, especially for the retirees who are looking at the value zones like Wilkes or West Jefferson.
Right, because you might crave deep seclusion. You might want to be at the end of a dirt road with no neighbors. But if you have a medical emergency, you need to know exactly how long it takes an ambulance to navigate those winding, steep, unlit mountain roads.
That metric alone dictates the long-term viability of a property for a huge percentage of buyers.
It strips away all the romance and replaces it with pure logistics. And logistics, at the end of the day, are what actually make a house livable.
They absolutely are.
This deep dive has completely changed how I look at mountain real estate. We moved past the fantasy of just pointing at a cabin on a 2D map. We looked at the cold, hard, and frankly fascinating data that governs this entire region.
We learned that buying the right property requires understanding the macroeconomics of remote work, the microclimates of elevation, and the hyperlocal politics of zoning laws. It is a brilliant, highly complex puzzle.
It really is. But I want to leave you, the listener, with a final provocative thought to ponder. We talked extensively today about how remote work and high prices are pushing buyers away from Boone and toward the value zones like West Jefferson and Wilkes County.
Right, the arbitrage we discussed.
But if that migration continues unabated and investors keep hunting for DSCR yield and remote workers keep hunting for affordable lifestyle, Will those hidden gems eventually face the exact same problems?
That's the million-dollar question.
Will West Jefferson and Wilkesboro eventually see the exact same short-term rental bans, the exact same luxury markups, and the exact same housing crunches that Boone is experiencing right now? Are buyers in Wilkes County today essentially just buying into Boone's market on a 10-year time delay?
That is the defining question for the next decade of mountain real estate. The map is always changing.
So the next time you see one of those glossy brochures with the perfectly framed A-frame cabin and the gentle smoke drifting from the chimney, remember, you weren't just buying a picture. You were buying a microclimate, a tax base, and a localized zoning ordinance. Choose wisely.